Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 12th day of December, Anno Domini 2020, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news. Does it?
Interesting timing.
Exactly. Dozens of states and the federal government sued Facebook on Wednesday in twin antitrust lawsuits, alleging that the social giant has abused its dominance in the digital market and engaged in anti-competitive behavior. The Federal Trade Commission in particular is seeking a permanent injunction in federal court that could, among other things, require the company to divest assets, including Instagram and WhatsApp, effectively breaking up Facebook as we know it. The states are also calling for the company to be broken up if necessary. Personal social networking is central to the lives of millions of Americans, said Ian Connor, director of the FTC's Bureau of Competition. I didn't even know they had one. In a statement, Facebook's actions to entrench and maintain its monopoly deny consumers the benefits of competition. Our aim is to roll back Facebook's anti-competitive conduct and restore competition so that innovation and free competition can thrive. Did they say competition enough? The parallel lawsuits, months in the making, represent an unprecedented challenge to one of Silicon Valley's most powerful corporations. The complaints zero in on Facebook's acquisition and control over Instagram and WhatsApp, two key services in its social media empire. Facebook announced in 2012 that it was buying Instagram for $1 billion. 2 years later, it announced a $19 billion acquisition of WhatsApp.
For a free app, that means they're getting a heck of a lot of money off of your data.
That's exactly right. If it's worth $19 billion to them just to buy it, what have they made? The suit comes roughly 14 months after New York Attorney General Letitia James announced that her office was leading a group of attorneys general in investigating Facebook for potential anti-competitive practices. More than 40 attorneys general ultimately signed on to Wednesday's complaint. The FTC, meanwhile, has been conducting its own antitrust investigation of Facebook since June of 2019. For nearly a decade, Facebook has used its dominance and monopoly power to crush smaller rivals and snuff out competition, James said at a press conference Wednesday. By using its vast troves of data and money, Facebook has squashed or hindered what the company perceived to be potential threats. The state suit calls for a court order requiring Facebook to notify state officials of any future acquisitions valued at $10 million or more. You can't buy computers for less than $10 million for a company that size.
Mm-hmm.
The most important factor in this case, which the commission does not mention in its 53-page complaint, is that it cleared these acquisitions years ago, Jennifer Newstead, VP and general counsel at Facebook, said in a statement. The government now wants a do-over, sending a chilling warning to American business that no sale is ever final. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is the U.S. government wants to break up Facebook. And your choices are about time, monopolies are great, I couldn't care less, and face what now, and other. So far, we've got 23 votes in the poll, and about time is way ahead of the others. Of course, if you said other, or you've got more to say on this, and I know you do.
If you do,
I would like it if you would head on over to our website at soundbites.org. Again, bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you. Scroll down at the right under fascinating stuff. You'll see the forum. Second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least, the number one item under poll discussion is 12 deck 20. The U.S. government wants to break up Facebook. And, of course, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. Or, of course, you can text us at 585-205-8887.
What's interesting is that when Facebook bought these companies, the regulators allowed it.
Yeah.
Yes.
So...
Well, they didn't know.
The lawsuit might have, well, yeah, they didn't, because Facebook promised they wouldn't do anything bad. Really, we mean it this time.
Mm-hmm.
This time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I got some swampland for you, too.
Yeah. Are you streaming us on the Cider page? Because you're not streaming us on our page.
I'm streaming us. I bet I forgot to switch it.
Well, you actually streamed Cider on the Soundbites page.
For a second until I caught that and moved it back, yeah.
Yeah, 34 seconds, I see it.
Yeah. Technical. Oh, I was going to delete that.
52 people saw it.
I know I changed it back. No, I'm on the Soundbites page.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm not seeing you there. Oh, well, maybe it's just
live me. Live stream. There's three people watching. So I'm one of them.
Huh.
Okay.
People on the chat, can you see me?
That's very weird. I am not seeing you.
Are you subscribed?
Yes, I'm subscribed.
But like you said, yeah, they didn't have any vision. And, you know, I talk to more and more folks that are literally just totally, how could I politely put it? Now, I'll just say, you know, fed up with Facebook and that. And a lot of folks have just deleted or ignored their accounts. I mean, I do very little on it anymore because, like they always said, you know, opinions on Facebooks are like belly buttons. Everybody's got one.
Yeah,
and you get so many out there, and they go from far left to far right and some in the middle, and it's like, you know what?
Yeah.
We don't necessarily want to hear about yours.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, you know, it's like, yeah, no. So that's why I've chosen now for well over a year just to, you know, I'm on it once in a while just to check on family and that type of stuff, but otherwise, yeah, no.
No, I get it. Absolutely.
Did you join Portal?
Huh?
Did you what?
There's apparently a new social network, Portal, that the Republicans like.
No, Parler.
Parler, yeah.
Yeah. I don't even do that. Twitter or any of that other stuff. You know what I mean? Yeah. No.
I certainly don't have any of it on my phone. I keep getting people who say, oh, you should get on Messenger. Get on Messenger. Yeah, I don't. No.
No, I've got this thing called a Life.
Yeah, I don't do any.
And it's still called a phone. If it's that important, call me.
Right. The same thing with people who, for their birthday, they want you to
give to an organization. Yeah, donate to a charity.
I will donate to those charities, but not through Facebook, because Facebook doesn't need any more of my data.
Right. Yeah. How much of a cut does Facebook keep of those
donations?
That's exactly
right. If I send it all to whoever, they get it all.
Yeah. Fill out a check and mail it to the actual organization and that type of stuff instead of using
third-party go-throughs. I don't know why. It's interesting. Okay, whatever. Doesn't matter.
There's 15 watching now.
No, I get it. I'm just not seeing it, and I don't know why.
I'm trying to find how to delete that other video that I accidentally put up, and I don't see a delete option anywhere. I can make it private and unlisted so it doesn't show, but how do I actually delete it?
And just to give folks a heads up, we will be doing a taped show the day after Christmas, but we will be here the day after New Year's. Just as FYI, spend the time with the family, you know, enjoy Christmas throughout the whole weekend since Christmas does fall on a Friday. We likewise are going to sit there and spend our time with our families and just take that time to do that. And then we will be back the following Saturday, though, the day after New Year's.
Kick off the new year.
I'll even bring the rum balls in then. We'll have the rum ball party then.
That's a good way to kick off the new year.
Oh, keep the merit ending for a little
especially
longer.
Especially after this year, and I know it's been hard on everybody, you know, that we've had to go through a lot, and folks have done a great job. I mean, you go so many places now, you just see everybody, for the most part that I see, wearing masks and everything else, and it's great, and we've all come together, and that's what New York State is all about, you know, and
the rest of the
country. Just coming together, and we're going to fight this and get it down and be able to enjoy next year.
Right.
So looking forward to that, folks. So exactly just celebrate right. with your immediate family and have a good time. And but like we've been saying, though, for Christmas ideas, you know, because it's only 2 weeks away. I mean, we've only got another weekend and then Christmas is right on us. It seems to have jumped on us real fast. If you're still looking for that one unique gift for the person, like we've touted before, and it's not spending a lot of money, look at a Raspberry Pi. We have had, over this past month and a half, a number of folks calling in and saying that they're doing this or they're doing that with a Raspberry Pi. Well, you know, if you've missed some of that, you could always go to YouTube and type in, you know, different projects for a Raspberry Pi, whether it's controlling your home security or whatever, and check those out because there's a lot of stuff out there you could do. And it's under, you know, it's around $100.
Yeah. Yeah.
You building one heck of a computer.
Exactly.
That, you know, will do all that stuff. And you'll be amazed at the little size of it. And it's not like you're investing a ton of money. It's powerful as all get out. And you can have fun with it.
Yep. And you know what also makes a great gift? A membership to Jazz 90.1.
Segway man.
We are in the midst of a little mini drive. So anybody who missed their chance during one of the normal pledge drives has the opportunity at this moment to become a member of Jazz 90.1. Just head on over to jazz901.org and pledge securely online through the big Donate Now button. Scroll down until you see the soundbite stuff. And do that. You'll find that, you know, at the $90.10 level, you get that great a membership card, which gives you massive discounts all over the place. Restaurants, hotels, events, things.
Gives you massive discounts.
Yeah, thank you.
All over the place. Restaurants. Hotels.
Might want to mute
I'm looking
that.
For the mute button. Yeah. So that's the soundbite stream. So I'm getting it on both my devices. It's just you.
No, I got it. I found it. It's not on the soundbites page at that moment, but it's on my regular here's all your stuff page.
Hmm.
The things you normally watch. So at any rate, you can do all of that. We should probably go to the phones.
That was the boss, though, that was texting.
Tell him to stop, or you could turn down your ringer. That would
I'd have to
sound.
I got
to
turn that off. Remember, we tried that before.
Yeah, I know. I don't
that
know
stupid
what
messaging
is.
Program that I use, but I love it.
No, I get that,
yeah.
But it
yeah,
maybe
it's annoying.
Just turn down your sound all the way.
Maybe not all the way. Maybe if the sound is muted.
No, I've muted the music, all the tones. It still comes through. That's muted.
That's not right. That's not right.
Must be like a VIP.
Because I've got it set. Remember the little, in the Pixel phones, you can sit there and say, do not disturb?
Yeah, but I meant actually turn this volume all the way down and see if that does it.
It's already down.
Wow.
Yeah. This app is weird.
I honestly don't like that. If it ignores everything that you do on your phone, I don't like it. All right, let's go to the phones. Our first caller is Larry. From Rochester, New York. Hi, Larry. What's up?
Good afternoon, guys. You are having too much fun today.
We are that.
This is a personal tweak of mine. I'll ask the question and listen online. It looks like I'm not going to see green light in my area until my 90th birthday, probably. And so I'm just wondering, how much effort would it actually take Spectrum to go from 100 to just 200? Megahertz on their internet. I mean, the last time I called, they assured me that they were working so hard they were losing sleep on it, and I just can't see that it would take that much to go from 100 to even 200. So,
well,
I just want to know your personal opinion on that, and I'll listen offline.
Thanks.
You guys have a great day, and thank you for all you do. And I am a member.
That's what we like to hear, Larry. Thank you.
Yep.
Okay, so as Steve just said, they are, in fact, at 200 in some places.
Yeah, and you can pay for 400 if you want to pay a ridiculous amount of money.
The big thing is money, and that's the big thing, Larry.
Hello?
In some places,
yeah, your
They will put up. It's got to do with the hardware at the back end as to how quickly that, how fast that is. And older equipment tops out at 100 megabits, and newer equipment tops out much higher than that. So it might be in your neighborhood. Their equipment will only do 100 megabits, or they don't feel that it's financially feasible for them to go to something bigger than that. So
to replace that equipment so far.
Right, right. And that's the problem. In terms of green light, we've said this many times. They're also working as fast as they can, but they have a couple of problems. One is money, and the other is, of course, right of way. And they have to fight for every right of way they get. So we're seeing a lot of people who are disgruntled, particularly with the not fiber companies in town. And I don't know, you know, without some sort of
heck, third world countries have faster internet than we do here in the U.S. and pay pennies on it.
Yes, I have friends in the Philippines, and they're shocked that we don't have gigabit everywhere in America.
Yeah.
They assume that we've got more than they have.
Oh, yes, because, you know, we're the high-tech companies here.
Yeah. And they're all on gigabit.
Yeah.
It wouldn't hurt to call Spectrum again if it's been a few months to see if they've upgraded your area.
Right.
Because on their website, they are offering 100 meg, 200, 400, 940 that they're calling the gig.
The gig.
Gig is 1024, though.
That's right.
But you're getting 940.
Or the gig is you and an amp and two roadies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's how that works.
So the gig is $110 a month, but you know, if you want it, you can. So that's probably
ridiculous. Okay, yeah. Whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever.
We won't go there.
Whatever. That's okay. At any rate, yeah. So it exists. That stuff exists, but it isn't.
Yeah.
Okay.
We just got 200 at our office, and we went from 5 on DSL to 100 with Spectrum, and that was, oh my God, how fast that was. And now we've got 200, and 100 seems slow.
Exactly. All right.
In fact, we're downloading these 12 gig OS upgrade files. It's done already?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So what's wrong? It's done already.
The first time I downloaded an update to Linux on Greenlight, I thought, crap, it didn't work.
Yep.
Because it was so fast.
Yeah, I had to do a couple upgrades for a couple of my programs, and it's like, I click it, and the icon's already there that it downloads, because I have everything download to my desktop.
Right.
Then that way I can put it in whatever folder I want.
Sure.
But look, it's already done.
Yep.
It's like, whoa.
All right, let's get back to the phones. Our next caller is Peter on the last train to Clarksville, Tennessee. Hiya, Peter. What's up? Peter? Are you there, Peter?
Oh, yeah.
Hello?
No, turn your radio off. We're on a...
You turn your radio off, Peter. You're on the phone now.
5, 4, 3.
Hello? Yeah,
I got to count down the delay.
Hello?
There we go.
Yeah, I had to get my AirPods in.
Oh, there you go. What's up?
I'm just calling to say hello. Steve, Nick, and Dave, it's good to hear you guys' voice and know that you're still on the air. This is Peter Alves.
Oh, hey, Pete. How you doing?
Hi.
I'm doing very well.
A voice from the past.
I'm doing good. a voice from 30 years ago.
Yeah, you're not kidding.
Yeah.
Life treating you well?
I'm doing well. I'm here in Tennessee.
A beautiful place to be.
Yeah, it is. It's about 60 degrees right now and sunny. And
we hate you, just so you know. Just so you understand.
Rub it in. Yeah. Uh-huh.
And you used to live here, so you know.
All my golf buddies that I left in Rochester, every winter I send them a beautiful photo of me out on the course and just say, hey, you can come anytime you want.
That's just cruel, Peter. That's just cruel.
Yeah, last night I was on Facebook, and reminiscing about Max Vastam, the BBS.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
And how running that compared to where we are now, you know, back when people couldn't even get on the internet.
That's right.
I have a group on Facebook, and I went to put something up there for sale just for people in the group, and notice now that Facebook will not let you post to a group to sell something, like in your neighborhood, if you have a neighborhood group, or if you have a private group and you just want to offer something to somebody in that group, without it going to Marketplace automatically now.
Yep, they know better than you, Peter. And the hell with what you want.
And so now they're after, you know, they got WhatsApp and Instagram. But now the eBay and now they're automatically doing the taxes, and they're automatically doing the labels, and they're just going after the sales platforms.
Sure, that's where the real money is.
Yeah, so anyway, but, you know, I voted, it's about time, but really, I'm okay with whatever they want to do. Let us buy our engagement on the platform, vote that way as far as what we really like and dislike.
There's probably a way around that if you don't, you know, put like for sale in the title or subject or something. Just put it in the body. Maybe it won't read it.
Yeah, I tried that, and I tried taking the price out, and I don't know if they caught that they were up there before or what happened. But anyway, I thought it was ominous.
They want to do what they want to do, and the heck with you.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, you guys, I got to say, man, 30 years, you don't sound any better.
Yeah. You think at some point we would have learned a little bit of, you know, radio etiquette or something. We're just not there. I get it.
I really thought all this time that sound bites had been picked up by a national, you know, it went from the public radio to a national platform, and they bought you guys out, or something happened like that.
Sadly, that did not happen.
That was a plan at one point.
Yeah, that was our dream, but never happened.
Then I Googled Steve, and I ended up finding sound bites.
Nice. There you go. Yeah. So now, of course, your job is to tell everybody in Clarksville about
and
sound
the
bites
surrounding
and get them
counties.
All listening.
Oh, yeah. Well, I got a few thousand on my Facebook group. I'm going to definitely post a link there.
Yeah, that's what we like to hear.
I'm going to tell them, blow you guys up, that because, you know, they all want to know who knows their stuff. And you guys definitely know your stuff. And, you know, you've been helping people for years.
Yep. Yep. Well, sometimes. Yeah.
We try. Once in a while, even like a squirrel gets lucky.
That's exactly right. In spite of ourselves,
now,
we do once in a while help
I've got
people.
Another question. Is the Apple Cider user group still going on?
Yep, we're still going on. We had our meeting this week. We're virtual now online because of the schools are shut down. But we're still going strong. We're, 40 years now?
Right. And they
so
have
a few
YouTube
things I've been
channel?
Doing longer than Soundbites.
Right.
We have applecider.org, and we do stream on YouTube as well as have our Zoom meeting. So we're still there, too.
All right, Peter, we got to go. We got to take a break. It was a joy talking to you.
Yeah, good to hear from you.
We'll hear from you again, I hope. Have fun.
Yes, you will.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you, 30 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, member supported, Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 36 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. And you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. Text us at 585-205-8887. Well, Waiting to read this news item for. I want to read this news item first.
Okay.
Very important. Been waiting to read this for a long time. It's finally over, and people everywhere are rejoicing. After years of pain, sorrow, anger, and yes, hate, it's over. As of the middle of January, it's going to be a whole new era. I am, of course, talking about the fact that Adobe is finally killing Flash.
Wow.
Adobe has released the final scheduled update in its Flash Player plugin weeks before Flash's official retirement. As noted on Adobe's site, Tuesday marked the last update for Flash outside mainland China, which has a separate version of the software. Adobe will stop supporting Flash on December 31st, 2020, and it will block Flash content from running on January 12th, 2021. Adobe offered a brief farewell in its release notes. We want to take a moment to thank all of our customers and developers who have used and created amazing Flash Player content over the last two decades. We are proud that Flash has had a crucial role in evolving web content across animation, interactivity, audio, and video. We're excited to help lead the next era of digital experiences. Flash has been on the chopping block since 2017 when Adobe announced it would finally end support. Flash had already was already being phased out in major web browsers, and Adobe has urged developers in 2015 to switch to newer standards like HTML5. There were good reasons to disable Flash, including frequent and numerous security holes, but it threatened the survival of countless old games and animations, a problem for web preservationists and anybody who fondly remembers platforms like Newgrounds. Is there anybody who fondly remembers Newgrounds?
Huh?
Fortunately, yeah, exactly. Fortunately, we've seen numerous efforts. Unfortunately, we've seen numerous efforts to keep Flash alive. There's an open source emulator called Ruffle. The Internet Archive is using that to preserve over 1,000 games and animations on its site. That's useful. Flash Megaportal Congregate with a K partnered with a museum to preserve its library of projects. But Adobe is about to finally say goodbye.
Here's the door. Don't let it hit you in the butt on the way out.
Are you still using Flash? Why? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. Or, of course, you can text us at 585-205-8887.
You don't really want to do it if you want to torture yourself.
Well, call us? Oh, you mean use Flash?
Yeah.
The thing about Flash is that it has been so full of security holes, so many. And, of course, Swiss cheese
doesn't have as much.
Yeah, exactly. And, of course, the holes are still there, and people are still exploiting them. So and even after it's dead, if you haven't removed Flash from your system, you really are still very, very vulnerable.
And because people were so used to installing Flash updates, because they happened so often, the bad guys started putting out fake Flash updates.
Yep.
And we're still – I had to clean a machine this morning that had a fake Flash update installed. And so what's happening now is the official Adobe installer, so if you do have it installed, it's offering to uninstall itself, which is kind of nice of it.
Yeah,
that is nice.
And then it offers to give you 10 free stock photos if you want to join their stock photo subscription service.
Right.
No, you don't need to do that.
Yeah, right.
No.
But yeah, so this do I want to? So now we're waiting for the fake uninstall Flash updates.
Right, that'll be next.
Yeah, so go to adobe.com and uninstall Flash
yourself. Just a matter
yourself.
Of time.
Yep.
Right. Hear us now, remember us later.
Right. All right. Did you say we had some?
Yeah, we've
texts?
Got a couple. We got a couple texts here. Hold on a minute. All right. First one, this is from Ed in Canandaigua. Went to the NPass site to select a version and found that there's two choices for Windows. One for Windows 7 32-bit and older, and one for Windows 10 and up. I'm running Windows 8.1. What's available for me in 64-bit?
Well, the Windows 10 64-bit version should work. Actually, the Windows 7 version should work, but you should never mix. Never mix, never worry. If you're running 64,
really bad.
Yes, it really will. If you are running 64-bit software mostly, running 32-bit software will slow your machine down every time you run it. Maybe not significantly, but depending on how many 32-bit programs you have, it will. So the Windows 10 version should run just fine because... the difference between Windows 8 and Windows 10 is, well, minimal, to be polite about it.
In fact, you may want to upgrade to Windows 10 so you have the security patches that they stopped releasing for Windows 8.
Right. Windows 8 is very buggy and very unsecure, and there are no updates. So I get it. People like what they like. But the fact is, as long as you understand that every time you go on the internet, you're very, very vulnerable, or anytime you download software or whatever, get a file from someone, whatever, open an email from somebody you don't know, you're very vulnerable. But the Windows 10 version should work for you just fine.
Okay, then the next one is, this is from, it says, Art Soundbites. I did not have a Facebook account and never go to Facebook.com. Yes, I still saw cookies being set and other requests for Facebook domains in log. Facebook is promiscuous. I ended up using Pillhole DNS sync whole software to
block. Pi-hole. It's a Raspberry Pi DNS server. DNS catcher, okay. I guess.
Yeah, virtually every website has a Facebook like button on it. So even if you don't have a Facebook account, you have a shadow account that's being called, because every website you've gone to, there's a Facebook thing there that says, this guy went to this website. And right. So they track you that way.
Right. You can block cookies from depending on your browser, it's easy or hard to block cookies from any individual site, including Facebook. One of the things that I suggest to everybody is you use a different browser to go to Facebook and not use that browser for anything else. Mm-hmm. And then on your main browser, block cookies from Facebook.
Yeah.
That's the closest you can get to not being tracked by Facebook. Now, that's not 100%. Because Facebook still knows what IP address you came from and can track
and
you
what
that
you
way.
Looked at and everything else. And if folks don't realize that, you know, if you've been searching, say, for Christmas gifts, all of a sudden you'll see all these suggestions pop up on your Facebook page or down along the side, because they are literally watching you and tracking you everywhere that you go.
Right. There are add-ins that one is called Facebook Fence, and there's a couple of others that will theoretically block ads from appearing in Facebook.
And it sounds like our texter was savvy enough to know how to set up Pi-hole,
right?
To block it at your DNS level, which is next level juju,
right?
Mm-hmm.
But Pi-hole is as Dave was saying earlier about Raspberry Pis, Pi-hole is a program you can run on your Raspberry Pi. What did he call it? DNS. It's a container. It tracks ads and trackers and blocks them.
And you put it in your router before the rest of your network, so it works for every device on your network. You don't have to set up every computer.
Each one individually.
Right. So normally, if you've got your own router, right? So you get your ISP's router, and then you put that into your own router to serve your home. In between those two devices, you would put the Pi-hole, and it's called a sinkhole. It's a DNS sinkhole, and optionally it'll serve DHCP to you as well. And what that does is, you can set up a thing that essentially says, I never want to see anything from this domain. Just kill
Lock
him.
It.
Kill him.
Yep.
And he's clearly set up Facebook, but of course those cookies still come in, because cookies are kind of a separate thing. They're actually, coming in a different way. So, Pi-hole is pretty effective. It doesn't really slow down the internet much. In fact, Pi-hole is one of the most effective ways to block networks. Pi-hole really just handles DNS, not your entire stuff. So you really don't have any slowdown with it. So Pi-hole is a pretty neat product if you're savvy enough to grab one and put it up. Dave's confused himself.
And it doesn't have to be on a Raspberry Pi. It can be a Raspberry Pi, but it can be on Ubuntu and Debian and Fedora.
Sure.
So you can get
right.
An old computer that you have lying around can be, well, you need two Ethernet cards, one in and one out.
Right.
That can be your Pi hole.
Right. Anything that'll do it will do it, so to speak. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Larry from Penfield, New York. Hi, Larry. What's up?
Hi, guys. I have a question about the demise of CloudPrint on my Chromebook, which is coming up at the end of the year.
Right.
And I've got an Acer Chromebook, and I've been printing to my brother printer just fine with CloudPrint, but now I'm kind of at a loss as to what to do. Even though I've got USB from my printer, I don't think the Chromebook's going to handle that, is it?
It might. Certainly all you can do is plug it in and try it. Is your brother printer Wi-Fi?
Yes.
You should be able to connect it via Wi-Fi as well.
Hmm.
And that's certainly much easier. What you do is you go into Settings, and down on the right under, I think it's Advanced. Yes, there's a printing section. And the first choice is Printers. And you can add a printer, and when you click on Add a Printer, the little plus thing there, you can add a print server. So what you need to do, and this is what I did with my brother printer, as a matter of fact. You said you had brother?
Yes.
Yeah. You go into the brother printer and you look through its menus and you can find its IP address. There's 100 ways to find it. So you find the IP address however you want to. And then you can put that IP address and then the make and model of your printer into Chrome, into the Chrome OS. And it'll load the right printer driver and let you print. It may, depending on the model you have, it may just be basic printing. So, for example, I have a brother printer that's an all-in-one, so I can do
printing,
copying,
scanning,
right? Scanning and copying and stuff. And in fact, I use the brother scan program to do my scanning.
Although it's becoming less and less usable, is the old faxing.
Yeah, yeah. I don't even remember if mine does fax. I'm sure it does. It's an all-in-one.
So many folks used to do that, and now it's like, yeah, no, it's easier, faster just to do it email.
I don't even have a landline, and you can fax from the internet now.
Yeah.
So there's all kinds of ways around that. What I do on my Chromebook is I use the brother has an app, an Android app, and of course, Chromebooks run Android, so I just use that when I'm scanning. But you can do printing directly from your Chromebook now, even without CloudPrint. They actually added that feature a while ago, which is why once they knew that was stable and working for people, that's when they decided they would get rid of CloudPrint. It's just not necessary anymore. And it also means that if for some reason your external network is down, you can still print.
Okay.
Okay, so that's the process you just described for me?
Yeah. Yeah, just go into Settings, Advanced, and Printers, and you can put in the IP address of your printer and the model of your printer, and bang, you're on your way.
Okay. While we're talking about printing, I'd like to relate an interesting experience I had last week with not printing. I had a G sheet, and I wanted to print one of the, it has several pages in it, and I wanted to print one of them. And I've been using this thing for years. It's got three pages that are interrelated and all that, so I didn't want to redo it. I did a little editing and tried to print the thing. And all it did was hang my printer.
Interesting.
And so I tried to turn it off. That didn't work. I had to unplug it to get it to do anything. And, yeah, it reset and came back up, and everything was fine and dandy, except I couldn't print to it still. And I went round and round for, I don't know, an hour or two at least, trying to figure out what was going on here. Finally figured out there must have been something on that page that it didn't like.
Yep, something in that you changed accidentally or didn't see a mark or something.
Some sort right. of
that hung it up.
Control character.
Yeah.
Yep.
So I regenerated that page and found the print queue and cleared that out, and voila.
Voila.
You're up and going.
Yeah.
Good.
So that was a really nasty experience.
Yeah, I'm sorry it happened to you, but yes, one of the issues that computers have always had is that it's very easy to type in control characters. If you're a programmer, that's a lovely thing.
Yep.
If you're anybody else, it stinks.
Yeah.
and control characters, of course, are generally not visible, and that causes an issue all the way around.
Yeah. One more comment while we're here. I've been waiting for green light to come to our neighborhood, but I guess we're on a schedule for next year. In the meantime, and over the last several weeks, Frontier has been very active in this neighborhood installing Fios.
Oh.
And I stopped one of the guys the other day and asked him, hey, how's this Fios compare with Greenlight? And, well, of course, he thought Fios was probably better, but, you know, who knows? I wondered if you guys would comment on, is there any real difference between the two, or is it pretty much the same thing? Or
I thought they'd abandoned Fios.
So did I. But Fios is also very good. It's another
fiber
optic internet service.
Fiber internet over
something.
FIOS, yeah.
But yes, and it's also very good. I don't know what the pricing is like one way or the other, and I don't know what their speeds are like since I've never, it's not in my neighborhood, so I've never even looked. So you'd have to do a price comparison. Also, it depends on whether or not there's some sort of contract. You could always get Fios now and change it out for.
Yeah, depending on how long you gotta stay in a contract.
Right, and depends whether it's going to be faster or whatever. But I believe what happened was, yes, they abandoned Fios until Greenlight proved viable.
Yeah.
And then they said, oh, well, if people actually somehow, for some stupid reason, want fiber.
There was some quote a Frontier executive did, Phil had on his Stop the Cap website, that customers don't want fiber internet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, because you probably asked the question wrong. Do you want fiber internet? No. Do you want internet that's really, really fast? Yeah.
Yes.
Well, he said that they're installing it all the way out to Fairport, so it's a huge area they're working in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
Well, do the comparison.
Yeah, do the comparison and see what it's going to cost you. It certainly can't hurt, again, depending on what the contract is. If you find that when green light comes in, it's less expensive, you can switch.
Yep.
Sounds like a winner to me.
Winner, chicken dinner. You win.
Thanks, guys.
Yep. Yep. Thanks.
Thanks.
Yep.
One thing I have seen Frontier doing is their normal service is 6 megabit over DSL, but they have been offering faster service by running multiple phone lines to your house and bonding them together.
Right. Right. All right, I think we've got time to talk to Brian from Rochester, New York. Hiya, Brian. What's up?
Doing well, guys. I'm watching the live stream.
Yeah.
And Steve, your shirt.
Yep.
Yeah.
Is not flat.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen the other one? Says if the earth was flat, the cats would have all pushed everything off the earth by now.
Yeah.
Yep.
Last night I had 3 friends over. Oh, you checked. I see. Very good. I had 3 friends over last night for a little Christmassy holiday thing, and all safely distanced and all like that. We're sitting in my living room, and a woman was sitting next to my TV, a Roku TV, that was not turned on. another person. Now, we're all of this age, same age group of a digit and a zero, okay?
And yeah.
One of the women had, even though we grew up in the same time period, had never seen Dark Shadows.
Wow.
And we don't. The other three of us were just incredulous. You never watched Dark Shadows? Well, it's on Pluto TV now, and you can watch it every day.
Right.
And about 2 minutes later, the smartphone, the woman sitting next to the TV, beeped up with a commercial for Pluto TV.
Wow.
Did somebody in your network Google it? Google Pluto TV?
No.
Because then that would have shown up in your IP address.
Right. But no, we're just sitting there talking, and we're going along, and all of a sudden your phone goes off.
What kind of smartphone did that person have?
Samsung.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In general, okay, so in general, whatever phone you have, both Android and iPhone, has an assistant. And, of course, Samsung has their own assistant, Bixby, whatever it's called this week. And they are always listening. Bixby, in particular, has a small issue in which it, every one of them can hear their trigger phrase accidentally.
Yeah.
Bixby apparently has that problem more often. So it may well be that one of you said something that sounded enough like to the phone, like either Bixby or hey, followed by the word Google, or, you know, we often also hear it with iPhones, and somebody says the S word.
Hi, Irene.
Right. we see it a lot with Echo Dot. Somebody says the Alaska keyword. And so we find that these things just pop on all by themselves. And it's just a matter of what somebody said in the background.
Yeah. But they're listening.
They're always listening. Absolutely. They're always listening. All right. I'm afraid we got to take a break.
Yep.
Keep smiling. Have fun.
Thanks a lot.
All right, we're done with the first hour, but don't go away. We've got a whole nother hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites coming your way right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that because of your continuing membership, we can continue to be member-supported, Jazz 90.1. Take a short break, actually a slightly longer bio break maybe, and we'll be back with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is the top of the hour, and you are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
This is 90.1 WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District.
Streaming online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. We're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show of the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites right here on Jazz 90.1. We had a text message.
Yep. And this is from Mike and Victor. And it says, thinking of getting a Raspberry Pi per your advice. Would you recommend the Pi 4 8-gig desktop kit for $139.95 or the Pi 400 desktop kit for $100? Seems to be limited to 4 gig.
Yes, the Pi 400 is let's start with the Pi 4. You can get an 8-gig model, and it runs at 1.4 gigahertz. Then you can get the Pi 400 1.2 gigahertz.
There's too many of them.
The Pi 4 runs at 1.2 gigahertz. The Pi 400 runs at 1.4 gigahertz, so it's 0.2 gigahertz faster. And you can actually bump it up to about 2.2 gigahertz, but that's another story. The Pi 4 is an 8-gig device. The Pi 400 is only a 4-gig device.
Only 4-gig? That gets me.
Right.
4-gig.
Right.
I remember when 32 meg was a lot of memory.
Now, what it all depends on is your use case.
Yeah.
If you're going to play with it, 4-gig is more than enough. If you're going to use it as your desktop, you might prefer 8-gig. So it really entirely depends. I have to say I have the Pi 4 with 8-gig, and frankly, I don't use nearly a half of it. I really don't. It's not my main desktop.
Most regular computers, people don't use half the power that's in them now.
Right. That's right. So my suggestion is whichever one makes you happy. And either one is really an exceptional toy. I've been looking hard at the Pi 400 because it's a keyboard with the computer right in it. It's everything but the monitor. You get a mouse, you get the keyboard, you get the operating system, you get everything all at once. And I've been lusting after that, but I've already got the Pi 4 with 8-gig. Like I said, I really don't use it.
The thing of it is, though, if somebody's, what my advice would be, since this is a Christmas gift and you're thinking about doing it, and if you're just getting into it and your feet wet, like they say, start small. Learn to crawl before you go running.
Right.
Start with a smaller package, and it's not like it'll go to waste. You know, it's an extra computer.
Right.
That you can do other things with, and just learn from that one. Then if you want to step up to something bigger and better, you can.
Right.
I posted a link comparing about all the different Raspberry Pi models so
nice.
You can see what the differences are between them. You can get the Pi Zero for $10.
Yes, you can. Yes, you can. But you still have to then buy power supply and everything else.
Yeah, you got to look at what you're getting for the package.
You want wheels on that car, do you?
Yeah, exactly. But you can get either one, and believe me when I tell you, neither one is a problem.
Yeah.
Unless you're looking to use it as your main desktop, 4 gig is enough, particularly if what you're doing is learning on it, playing with it. I use my Pi 4 with 8 gig to do a lot of backup stuff and a lot of automated stuff for my network, and it doesn't. It really, I'm not using half the RAM or half the processing power. So the Pi 400 would be more than enough to use, unless you're going to use it as your daily driver.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But like I say, if this is going to be something you're just starting out and just learning, start small and go from there. It's not a heck of a lot of money. And it's not like it'll go to waste. You can keep that going for one project, and if you want to step up to the bigger and better machine, you can, and do other things with it.
Yep.
And that way you've literally got flexibility that you could, on your lower one, go ahead and set everything up. If it gets mucked up, no big deal. And then once it does, you can also then transfer it over to the other one.
Yep, exactly.
So, I mean, it's a win-win all the way around.
Yep, exactly right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Matt from Webster, New York. Hi, Matt. What's up?
Hey, top of the afternoon to you fellas.
And the rest of the day for yourself.
I got good news to report. I scored a mint deal on a Google Pixel 4 on the net for $80.
Nice.
Clearly white. And I just got a note from you guys. Never had one in my life. Heard really good things about them. I need to know what to expect. Is there any apps I should get for it? And just tell me more about it, because I've never had one and really stoked and excited to get it.
Good for you. Well, the Pixel is Google's flagship machine. The 4 right now is the second model up. There's a 5 now. And the 4 has the same features, most of them have an insanely great camera, Sorry, I'm not allowed. Am I allowed to say Sam the Great when it comes to not Apple? An insanely great camera.
Trademark Steve Jobs.
Right. if he wants to say something to me, you will.
Yeah.
And it has some great software that makes it work amazingly well.
Well, that's the one thing he's going to be amazed at, is that once you turn that phone on, unlike other phones, you're not going to see all these other icons blasting you when you first turn it on. It's literally going to be, empty.
Yeah, because there's no bloatware. You may have noticed, if you've got a Samsung phone or in particular, they're notorious about this, but many of the phones out there, you get all kinds of apps you don't want and can't get rid of. None of that is on the Pixel. And so you essentially start with an empty phone. My suggestion would be that you get the standard Google apps. Make sure you've got some will be loaded, but get Google Photos, get the Google Messages app for system messages, SMS, text messaging, and things
Google
like
Chrome
that.
Browser.
Google Chrome browser. And stuff like that.
Google Docs, Google.
Yeah. Well, you're right. If you want to look at that stuff, get Google Keep. Google Keep is the one program
yes,
I use most
love
often.
It. Love that.
And in general, you can keep. The nice thing about Pixels is you can keep them lean and mean.
And one of the nice things about the Pixel, because it is a Google branded phone, is you get all the Android updates almost immediately. You don't have to wait for months like you would with other carriers.
Yeah, particularly when there's a security update. Yeah. That's really nice. And, of course, you're going to want Google Photos. Right. That's one of the big ones.
Yeah. And have just automatically update. It'll automatically upload your photos right to your account.
Right. So there's, those are the things that you'll most need. You can get Play Books and Play Games and Play Music and the Play Store in general to do music and books and whatever.
But overall, you guys would say it's a pretty exciting phone to experience.
My absolute favorite phone.
Both Nick and I both. This is our second Pixel phone.
Right.
All right. Well, I'm looking forward to it.
And get the recorder app. Get the recorder app. The recorder app is absolutely amazing. It does transcripts on the fly, right in your phone without even using data from the web and a Pixel phone. Pixel 4 is more than strong enough to handle it. That's really
great.
Thanks
a lot, guys.
All right, thanks, Matt.
I appreciate the advice.
Yep, thanks.
Have a nice day.
Bye-bye. Don't forget to join us tomorrow online. We'll be in the Soundbites Lounge. That's pinned at the top of them.
Yeah, I changed that pin at the top, so it says Soundbite Lounge now.
Thank you very much.
We just have to change the link.
right. I do have to do something about that. But definitely my suggestion would be to join us. You're welcome to ask any questions you want. If nobody asks a question, we'll just sit and chit-chat for a while. But join us in the lounge. We will not be doing the lounge next week. It will be Christmas weekend, and I will not be in the lounge.
You'll be in the physical lounge, not the virtual lounge.
Right. This is Parenton?
Yeah.
Okay. Our next caller is Ernesto from Parenton, New York. Hi, Ernesto. What's up?
Hi, guys. Listen, I had called quite a while ago about a backup software to back up my whole drive.
Yeah.
And my wires and all that. And one of the guys suggested Clonezilla. I downloaded that, but I didn't know how to get that going. So I just want a recommendation. It was an easy app that I can use to back up my drive and also to update it periodically. As easy as can be. I mean, I'm not an expert, but I don't want anything to happen to my computers.
Sure.
So do you have any recommendations? I looked up on PC World, I think, Acromis.
Yeah, no. there's a number of them. I have a page on asknick.com/backup.php, and that lists every one that I thought was
relevant.
Good.
And good.
And there's a subtle difference between a cloning program like Acronis True Image and Clonezilla, where you download it, then you have to image it to a flash drive. you boot the flash drive to clone your main hard drive onto a second hard drive. Because a lot of times the cloning can't run. It can't right. clone the drive it's booted from. If, so, if you're looking for just a backup program that you right. run, there's a couple of very nice ones on that as well.
So are you looking to back up the operating system as well as your data?
Everything.
Okay, but why?
Yeah, that would be my question.
Just in case something happens, and God knows with all these viruses and God knows
exactly.
what.
Exactly. Well, that's where, and I think Nick's going to back me up on this, that the only thing you really have to worry about backing up is your data.
Yeah, you don't have to back up everything.
Because if you get something in there, a virus or anything else, you don't know at what point it might have entered your machine and woken up and then infected it. So yeah. by just backing up your data, your phone, your photos, your documents, and anything that's important to you, that's the key thing. Because otherwise, it's always better to start fresh. Install the operating system so nothing else is in there. And then right after you install the operating system, I always suggest installing Revo Uninstaller, and then your antivirus software, and then spyware software. Then from there on, you start installing the rest of your programs that you want on that machine.
The only real reason to back up your entire operating system is if you're using a program that doesn't exist anymore. You couldn't put it on a new machine. But other than that, what you really want to do is make sure that you've got your data backed up. Because as Dave said, if you back up your operating system, you have no idea what kind of cruft you're pulling along with that. And you may be just bringing back the same set of problems you had.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in terms of backup software, there are a number on here that are very, very good. I personally recommend pCloud, which you can see at the top of the screen in yellow. Yes, I get a couple of pennies every time somebody buys a copy of pCloud using that link. But whether you use that link or not, one of the nice things about it is that it's a one-time cost. I have the half a terabyte version, and every time I save a file to my docs directory, documents directory, it is automatically and instantly backed up to the cloud. I don't even think about it. I don't even worry about it. I don't even care about it. It's up there, bang, done. If my machine dies, I have the backup right up there. All I have to do is on my new machine or whatever, reinstall pCloud, bring everything right back down, bang, I'm done.
Yeah, what about programs? Because most of the programs now, you got to download them and then install them.
Right, and as we said, it's the programs that get most of the viruses. So if you have to replace, if you have to restore because of a virus or because a program has died, you don't know at what point that program got infected or started to go bad.
Right, because some of them are very tricky. You can download a virus, and it has a time delay on it, purposely, so that, you know, it can embed itself. It gives itself time to embed it in other areas, and then wake up and start attacking your machine. And then you got to have, it's like a hitting moving target and trying to find it.
Right.
Yeah.
But in general, if what you want is to back up your entire system, two things. First, be aware that you may be backing up the very problem you're trying to get around. But secondly, if you want something that's fairly safe, none of them are easy because of backing up an operating system, you cannot back up a running operating system. So, but EaseUS will. I don't know the free version will do it, but the premium will. Like we said, Acronis, CloneZilla will do it, and any one of those would do it. I think Macrium will do it as well. But all of those Windows-based stuff, if you're looking for only backing up your data, there are a lot that are easier to use, including pCloud.
Windows actually has two backup programs installed. There's Windows 10 FileSync. And there's still the Windows 7 backup that's in there. And we have seen over the years that the backup works pretty good.
Yeah.
But the restore doesn't work very well at all.
Stinks.
No,
it's
so if you can't restore your data when you need to, you don't want kind of want to stay away from that.
Right. Yeah. But either one would work.
What about product keys?
You should have those recorded separately anyway. Most of the time, what we're seeing now is that apps want you to log in over the internet to your account to verify your ownership. Right. They don't have a physical key in them anymore.
In general, you should always, if you have keys of some sort, text or whatever they are, numbers, set of numbers, you should have those backed up somewhere. You should have a log somewhere of all of those things. I keep them in NPass.
Yeah, or whatever, yeah.
Keep the box that came in.
Yep. Keep the box that came in or write down that code.
Yep.
There's no shortcut for that, I'm afraid.
And that's why a lot of programs are doing now their internet activation, because no one keeps those boxes anymore.
Right.
And you get a new computer, your computer dies,
whatever. No one gets boxes anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, because there's no CD drives to install with anymore. Right. So for a long time, in fact, even Microsoft Office now, you can still buy a box, and it comes with a key card that says, go online.
Yeah.
and do this. So there's no disk anymore.
Right.
But it does make it easier to reinstall your own stuff by logging back into their account that you made that stored your key code for you.
But then you have to keep track of those accounts.
Yeah.
What was your website again, Nick?
AskNick.com/backup.php. I think it's...
Backup?
Yeah.
Slash... after backup is what?
.php.
And you can search for backup on the Soundbites website, too?
It's the fourth or fifth one down on the main page. It says, you don't have enough backups.
Okay.
And that's got a link right to that page where you can source: backing up SNIC, and it takes you right to that page, and you can check out all the choices.
Thanks a lot for your help, guys.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
In fact, I just had to do that this week for a customer's machine. They wanted their data backed up, so we did. Then we found malware on it, so we had to clean it. And back it up again, because the backup had the malware in it now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
No backup is perfect, but generally speaking, it's better to be backed up than not. That's pretty simple. All right, our next caller is Al from Rochester, New York. Hi, Al, what's up?
Hey, guys. Top of the day to you. Thanks again for taking up your Saturdays and devoting it to supporting us poor users.
Oh, it's our pleasure.
Yeah. So I got to throw my two cents in on the topic of backup, and I know you've heard me before, but you got new listeners, so I don't quite agree with the concept of not doing a full system backup if you have the ability.
Okay.
Yes, it's you could be saving the problem that you're trying to avoid, but I just look at what people have done to set up their computers and them time and effort. Of making everything just where it needs to be, and then them just understanding how their files are stored. To start from scratch is for you and I and the rest of us to do this all the time is not a big task.
It's a lot of an extra hassle, though, to boot your backup disk and your backup cloning software and backup the entire system. And most people aren't going to go to that hassle. In fact, even with automatic backup programs running on the computer, we see people that haven't backed up in weeks.
Right.
Oh, sure. Oh, no, there's never avoiding that. But even if they do they bought the computer, they get all set up, and then after about a year, they do a full image backup, and they don't do it again for another year. For most people, things don't change that fast.
True. That's true. But the thing is, you only need to make that backup when you change something in the operating system or add a new program or whatever.
Right, right. So you just do incrementals.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
my example would be, because it's the thing I'm most used to, is the Macrium Reflect. Yes, you can do a full system backup right to the hard drive. It does a shadow copy. And the incrementals are fast and easy. I mean, it's not something I would point a brand newbie to, but on the other hand, I don't think there's any program that you could hand somebody to out of the box that doesn't need a little bit of support.
Right.
Yeah. But and the other thing is that serial numbers and license numbers, I mean, they're still around. And even if you are licensing through the internet, it's a pain in the neck, to keep it mild, to go through all that process.
You know, I have to agree with you. I tend to forget how what a huge pain in the patoot Windows is.
Yeah.
Because I do it with Linux, and I've got a program that, that automatically, every day, as a matter of fact, at 3 a.m., it backs up all my data constantly with pCloud. But at 3 a.m., I back up a list of every program that's installed. And if I have to reinstall the operating system, that's fast to begin with. But then I just run that list, and every piece of software I've ever installed is back.
Yep. And that Linux reference is a perfect example. I mean, I know you guys for 40 years because we've all been playing with PCs that long.
Right.
So I play with Linux, and I'm back at day one. And the simplest things that I want to do on Linux, I got to do research, and I got to dig and poke. Yep. And it really reminds me, you know, what a learning curve is like, and it's not fun.
That's it. That's a very good point, Al. It really is. So, yeah, you're changing my mind. If people use backup, whole disk backup or cloning judiciously, A, make sure your machine is absolutely clean, and the whole thing, hardware, all your software and all your data, and then do a backup, and then couple that with a backup program like pCloud or whatever else you're going to use, an incremental backup, whatever it's going to be. That's a good way to go. It's a lot of work, and a lot of people won't do it, but it's a good way to go. I agree.
Yeah. Well, thank you for letting me throw my two cents in.
No, you're always welcome to do that.
And I will make one reference to the past, that I, like all of us, have had more than a few users come to us, you know, hand in hand, saying, it broke. What's it going to take to put me back together again? So,
right.
We got to help them.
Right. That's true. We got to help them. But if they help themselves, it's easier for us to help them.
Yep.
All right. We got to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 30 minutes after the hour. It's the longest running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites. Right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. One, turn your radio down. Two, turn your radio down lower. Three, remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. Four, make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. Five, calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. Six, if you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And seven, is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
And I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 37 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Bob from Irondequoit on the line. What's up, Bob?
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have a question about Microsoft Office Outlook. And my question is, how I have it set up, I have on the left-hand side, it has my favorites. And obviously the inbox is the next column. And what I am trying to do is I want all my email to come into the in column, but then drag a specific email to one of those favorite folders. And once it hits that folder, I want to have subfolders in it where it could be, let's say, technicians, and then list all the technicians. But I want the email to then go automatically to that particular technician or however that would be. Is there a possible rule that can be written to make it do that?
Yes, you can create filters for email in Outlook.
Yeah, does it call them rules or filters?
Yeah, yeah, I think they call them rules.
Yeah.
So you click on the rule. There's an icon in the inbox, or actually any folder, I think. And you click on the rules icon and then manage rules, and then you start a new rule and go from there. So what you can do is say, okay, anything that comes from Joe goes to the Joe mailbox under technicians. Anything that comes from Mary goes to the Mary mailbox under technicians. And then you know, say apply that rule to all new email. And then when a new email comes in, it gets checked and moved. You can move, you can copy, you can do whatever you want with it.
Set colors.
You can change colors for emails. You can set the level of importance. There's all kinds of things you can do with rules. So you just want to make a new rule that basically says if it's from, and you do it by email address in this particular case.
So it's easiest if you click on an email you want to act on, then it can read the from and the to and the address and all that stuff.
Right,
and
you make a rule based on this email.
Okay, but I don't want it to, when it hits my inbox, I want to be able to move it from the inbox to that folder. And then once it hits that folder, to then go to like Joe or Steve or whoever's in that box.
You would have to put it into the folder you wanted it to go in.
Yeah, I don't think it has that level of granularity.
And the only time rules are activated is when mail is received.
Well, he might just try creating a rule in the technician's folder,
put the rule there that once it hits that generic folder, from there it disseminates it down into the various other subfolders.
Instead of dragging it to the technician's folder, just drag it to the Joe folder.
But if he wants to do it that way, it's not impossible, I think.
Right.
If you create the rule in the technician's folder, it says if an email goes to here, comes to the technician's folder from Mary, it goes to Mary.
You can only make rules on your inbox.
Sure.
I'm looking on Microsoft's support site now.
Okay.
That's why. Okay.
Yeah, so if you want to drag it to a different folder, you'd have to do that manually. If you want it to activate on the inbox, then it can do that.
Yeah.
Sorry.
That's not what I want. Because I want to be able to see the email. I don't want to have to go to each individual file folder.
Well, yeah, but then and then after you read it from the inbox, just drag it into the Joe subfolder as you want.
Right, you can open up the folders on the side with a little arrow, and you could keep those open if you've got enough room on your screen, and then just drag right into the subfolder.
See, that's what I'm trying to eliminate. I'm trying to.
Yeah, you can't have it both ways, I'm afraid.
Yeah, you can't do it both ways.
Well, actually, you can. Hold on.
Okay.
Instead of moving it to that folder, copy it to that folder. Then you have a version in each place, once you've seen it, you delete it.
You'd have two copies.
From the inbox.
Yeah, that's the way to do it, sure. Okay.
That's the only way you're going to do that. Sorry.
Okay. No.
And you can also mark it as red or whatever you want to do.
Yeah,
so.
Right. Yep. Microsoft wouldn't be that smart.
Yeah, right. I'm afraid they don't have that level of granularity. Sorry.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Yep, thanks.
All right, bye.
Yeah, they're pretty good, but they're not that good.
We were looking at this the other day for a customer. They wanted rules on their sent mailbox. So I've any mail to or from Joe, I want to go in this mailbox. And the rules only work on the inbox on incoming mail.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So sent mail, you have to move yourself.
Right. Oh, well. It's not perfect.
Yep.
All right, our next caller is Judy from Webster, New York. Hiya, Judy, what's up?
Well, I hope you can help me because I'm about ready to junk this computer.
Okay. What's up?
You know, with all the end-of-year Medicare stuff, you know, I've been browsing here and there, so I finally settled everything. And now every time I'm on my computer, I get all these pop-ups from all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And I want, how do I get rid of them?
You have accidentally installed some malicious software that's giving you pop-up ads.
Probably.
Yep.
And that probably came from an ad on a malicious website right. that you accidentally went to.
So one of the okay, so there are a couple of places that are typically where we get these things. One is from toolbars. The set of icons across the top of your browser are called a toolbar.
Yeah,
and you can have multiple toolbars.
And they always the ad is always sounds so good. You want to search the web better? Yes, install this toolbar. And we'll give you thousands of ads.
Right. So you don't have to do the searching. We'll send them to you.
Yeah.
But so you want to take a look. What browser do you use?
Google Chrome.
Okay. So in Chrome, you can go to settings and check to see what you've got installed.
There's probably an extension installed that's adding the pop-up windows.
Right. So, in fact, you want to search extensions. And you can check to see what you've got there. You can also, right from the three dots in the upper right corner, you can go under More Tools and look at all your extensions. I just did that today and turned off about 15 of them, a couple of which said, this is now dangerous, don't use it anymore, so I uninstalled them.
Okay.
But that's probably, honestly, where it's coming from. So you might want to see to it that that your extensions are only the ones you intended to install and are clean.
Okay. And it probably wouldn't hurt to dance the whole security tango just in case something deeper got in.
Right.
Okay. Well, I use Webroot, so...
Well, that's an antivirus program. It doesn't always stop...
Spyware and malware,
yeah.
Okay.
In fact, the incidence of viruses are way down because malicious software and ransomware and fake messages are much more easy for the bad guys to write.
And they make money off of that, where the viruses they really didn't make money off of. But if, you know, they can write a spyware program that searches where you're searching and then sell that list, you know, if they collect, say, a million names in that, they can offer that up to other companies saying, well, hey, all these folks are looking for stuff like that are relevant to your product. Pay me, and I'll give you that list. They're making money off of that then.
Right.
Okay, well, I just got a check on extensions, and they did say there were two that weren't any good, so I'm going to remove them.
Yep.
There you go. Give that a try. You may find that solves your problem.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Yep. All right. Thanks.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, we always say... and I'm saying this because I'm looking at all this on my Chromebook. We always say you can't get viruses on a Chromebook, but of course you can still get pop-up ads. You can get all that stuff because if you install an extension that brings in junk, you're going to get junk.
Yep. And one of the problems is that since most people are running their computer as the administrator, because that's how they get set up. Sometimes going to these websites that install malicious software, don't even have to ask for your password because you're already the administrator.
That's right.
I really wish both Windows and Mac would set it up so that you create a standard user.
And you got to log in as the administrator separately.
Yeah. You make it the administrator separately, and then you make a standard user to do all your work in.
Well, you make the standard user the default.
Yep.
You've got to log into the standard user.
Yeah.
Right.
We do have one question that came in. All right. Did you guys mention a jelly bean or something like that or so ago that finds all your license keys?
Magic Jelly Bean is a company, and they have something called the Product Key Finder. we're too far away to.
Yeah, I know. Mine is sinuses.
Mine too. Yeah, Magic Jelly Bean's Product Key Finder will look through your registry because in Windows, most of the product keys are stored in the registry, and it can find them. It even works on some Mac software. But what we're seeing is a lot of the newer software doesn't store the product key locally. It only stores it in your account online. So we've run into that with Office 2011, Office 2016, that it can't find the product key because it's not stored in your computer. But that is something you can check to get your product keys out. And it actually can, especially on Windows, can find your Windows product key that's supposed to be on the side of the computer from when it was built. But
yeah, right. Nowhere.
And especially on laptops, it will get put on the bottom where it gets rubbed off from the laptop moving around over the years.
Or they did get wise, though, for a while there. They were taking the product key and putting it inside where the battery sat. So you'd have to pull the battery out and then see your product key code.
Right. Yep. In addition, if you go to our website at soundbites.org, scroll down on the right under search posts and type in Jelly Bean, you'll see two posts about it.
There's also, we had mentioned,
in our site, and that'll lead you right to it.
We had mentioned Nearsoft last week that makes a lot of cool little programs. He also has a product key finder for finding your Windows product key. Right. So it's product key without a T, and Magic Jelly Beans is product key with a T.
Right, right. That's a pretty big deal, frankly. Having your product key handy and available is very important. Again, if you're using a password manager like EnPass or LastPass or one of those, then put all those keys in there. Yep. And make sure they're backed up. That's the safest thing to do. I have an entry called product keys.
Yep.
And
same here.
You know, in there, there's EnPass at least, and most of them have a notes field. And I put the notes in there. So Windows 10, boom, there it is. I still have one from Windows 8. I've got Windows 7. Linux doesn't need them. But you put in, and serial numbers for all my hardware devices are in there. So
anything that needed product keys or numbers like that, I've got it both. Yep. Like you said, in EnPass, and then I also created another document up on Google Docs.
Sure,
and I've got it up there. Plus, it's also saved to two different hard drives.
And especially Windows,
just in case, because losing that or if something crashes,
that's right.
Trying to get at them.
Well, and Windows is really picky about product keys. It's actually not as bad on Windows 10 now. But say your hard drive died, we ran into this with a lot of customers. You put a new hard drive in, you go to reinstall Windows, and the Windows activation service says, "Oh, this is a second computer. Your key doesn't work anymore."
Right. Yep.
Well, no, it's the same computer with a new hard, and you have to jump through hoops. You got to call Microsoft.
Mm-hmm. If enough of your hardware changes,
yeah,
and nobody knows what that threshold is.
A single hard drive is enough, though, because I run into that.
Yeah, it is.
Yep.
RAM didn't seem to matter.
RAM doesn't seem to matter. But if hard you add USB ports, it doesn't seem to matter.
I think Ethernet did, because that Ethernet has its own MAC address. Yeah. Yes. I think it's things that have serial numbers.
Yeah, that's for sure. But yeah, so you do want to be well aware of that. And of course, that's all going to change or not when Windows starts being served from the web. Well, and now Mac is Apple is doing that too. You can get a Mac Mini in the web from AWS.
Yeah.
From Amazon Web Services, you can now get a
virtual computer,
Mac Mini now.
As more software goes to web authentication, Microsoft, Adobe, Intuit, the latest Quickens now, you have to log in with an account to get your software to work right. It doesn't matter as much as what computer you're doing it on, because its software is licensed to you, the person, not to the computer you're on.
Right. I haven't yet looked into what the cost would be for a Mac Mini up there, but it should be.
There was that company in Las Vegas, Mac Mini Colo, where they had thousands of Mac Minis.
Real
Mac Minis in a co-location that they would rent out for people that needed server space.
Nice. But yeah, we're really getting to the era where both Windows and Microsoft and Apple are going to have their operating systems cloud-based, at least to some extent. It's certainly better for them, because if they can lease you a space on a server it costs them much less and they make much more money than they do selling you a computer, which you'll keep for 10 years because you're cheap.
That's where I'll turn around, put my other Windows 10 machines back to Windows 7 and stick to my Chromebook.
Yep.
Surf the web on my Chromebook because the other two machines, they don't need the internet. They just run other programs that are computer-based. They're not internet-based.
You're already using cloud computing with Chrome.
That's right.
Exactly. So, I mean, and I don't have to worry about it getting, you know, infected and paying for an operating system.
Well,
no.
And Google, in fact, that's a good point because what Google did was pave the way,
mm-hmm.
right? When you use Google Docs... and now, of course, you can also do it with Microsoft 365 and with iCloud Works
yep.
thing business. I never remember what they're calling it this week. you do that via the web, and all the real work gets done on the web. And so people are getting much more comfortable with that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've talked to two different folks now at work and convinced them to go to Chromebooks. Because I say, you know, that's my, just like here, we say, what are you doing with it? Well, you know, I like to surf the web, check my email, check my bank account online. I said, Chromebook.
Chromebook does it. In addition,
why do you need anything more? And they go, well, I don't really. And I, well, what if I want to create a document? Google Docs.
Well, right. And the same thing is true. Photopea and Pixlr let you do photo editing on the web. You can do audio and video editing on the web. All of that is available, and all of it, some of it costs money, but it's all available on the web, and you can do it all through a Chromebook. I know a guy who does all his audio and video editing with a Chromebook.
Yep.
And all of it on the web.
And you can also download the Jazz 90.1 app, put that on your Chromebook, and listen to great music all
That's
the time.
That's exactly right. All right. That music tells us we are done for another week. In fact, yes, we are. We're not done for 2 weeks because we'll be here next week. But then we're off for a couple weeks. But I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. I want to thank everybody who called in. You got to call in earlier for everybody we did not get to. We're happy to take your calls, but not at the end of the show. We'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites and the Truly Great. And again, truly grateful to you that we can continue to be member-supported. So if you can find it in your heart, go over to the website, jazz901.org, and make a donation. And we will see you in just 166 hours. Be good to one another, will you?